But Argentina limped along without much hyperinflation, without too many insane deficits, until the oil crisis of 1973.
Welcome to the More Freedom Foundation podcast. We are your hosts, Rory McElhone, and I'm joined by News Muse, Robert Morris.
News Muse, I like that. That's a new one. You managed to come up with a new one every time. How are things? How's it going?
Things are okay. We're in the middle of a rain warning, but that's nothing too unusual. And how about yourself?
I'm being honest with myself. I'm trying to quit smoking cigars so I can smoke more cigars. Most summers, I start off having one every week or so, you know, a nice cigar out on the porch. And then it sort of accelerates to the point where I'm smoking one or two or even three a day. And if I keep smoking like that, then I'm eventually just going to have to quit entirely. So, you know, I want to stop smoking now. So, you know, maybe I can start off having one or two at some point next summer. That's the idea anyway.
Do you find yourself stocking up on Cubans when you're outside of America?
I try to. They're harder and harder to find. I was in Italy recently, and I definitely made an effort to do that, and it was surprisingly difficult. I guess people are just getting healthier.
Do you know where may be difficult or very expensive to get cigars? Is a country that has incredible inflation, that which would be Argentina.
Indeed, and actually,
I think it's at about, is it 140%?
Oh, it's absurd, whatever it is. And it's always, you know, at those kinds of numbers, it's just day-to-day living and becomes a struggle. But I know you're usually the segue master, Rory, but I had a segue here because much like with smoking that I just seem to never be able to give up, there's just certain levels of social spending and approaches to government. Like in particular, Peronism, that just Argentina can't seem to give up either.
Very unique style of governing.
Indeed, a very unique style of governing. And I think in some cases, as we'll get into today, I think perhaps unfairly maligned. I think that there's actually more blame to go around in Argentinian politics than the story we're sort of typically told, which I was surprised to find investigating this question over the past couple days. But still, the standard story is also accurate in some respects. And the reason we're getting into this today
is because an old political philosophy that is very close to Robert's heart is now becoming back in vogue, which would be libertarianism.
Indeed. We're looking at Javier Milei, who is deeply, deeply amusing.
Unique individual.
Yes, amusing political figure, though also with some harder and more disturbing elements. It's tempting to look at this guy as if he's a clown because he acts out in many clownish ways. I think just as Donald Trump is very amusing in some respects, there are other aspects to this guy that are a little darker and a little more disturbing. Easier to laugh along because he's now in charge of Argentina rather than the most powerful country in human history with a whole bunch of nukes.
And refuses to answer whether his dogs give him financial advice.
There's that too. There's that, too. If you aren't familiar with this guy, just as an introduction to Javier Milei, he's worth just Googling. He's got a very distinct look. He kind of looks like a 1990s music star, but like a 1990s music star today, you know, like someone who like had a moment in the 90s and is still, you know, he's kind of like still trying to have a weird, distinct style in his mid-50s, and it's just kind of sad. That's sort of what Javier Milei looks like. And not someone who was really successful in the 1990s, like someone who like had a one-hit wonder, and he's still, you know, we're gonna make it. That's sort of the look that he has. And just that very idea that this was meant to be a serious politician in 2023 in a serious country is a little hard to credit. But I think the reason that this has come about is because of a very long history of Argentina that I have actually prepared enough to go into a little bit, just a long series of governing failures that have left the Argentine population in a position where they're like, we'll try anything. And Javier Milei is certainly something.
Well, their growth tends to be a bit crazy. They either seem to be doing very well or terrible. They never seem to plateau as a country. Yeah, they did seem to grow very well recently, and now they're back to crashing again, it seems.
The finances of the country are just completely out of whack, and they have been for quite some time. And it's not just the Peronists. It is also the folks who've tried something different, the neoliberal approaches in the 1990s, and from 2015 to 2019 under Mauricio Macri, have been similarly disastrous. And it's just been a whole series of stuff, things not working out. I've been long aware of Argentina as sort of a cautionary tale, a sort of classic example when I was more right-leaning of, you know, why left-wing politics don't work. The classic sort of one-liner on Argentina is that it is a formerly developed country. It is sort of unique in that class.
Well, I heard
world.
That economists refer to four types of country, which is developed, undeveloped, Japan, and Argentina. So it's in a whole group of its own.
Indeed, indeed. Because around the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries, and for a few decades thereafter, it was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. You look at per capita GDP figures, and they were outpacing places like Denmark and the Netherlands in the 19-teens and 20s. It was a miraculously well-off place. And that has not been the case since around the 1930s. The extent to which
Britain using it as a way of securing food in case Ireland went independent. It was putting a hell of a lot of money into it for a long time as a sort of breadbasket.
I didn't go into that in great detail, but I do know that during the Great Depression, when folks were getting very, very, very protectionist, Argentina and Britain signed a special deal so the food could still keep coming from Argentina to the United Kingdom. So there's no question.
It is an example that wealthy countries can go disastrously wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I think Argentina's problem is, all of the explanations, all of the reasons that are put forward by people across the political spectrum have some validity. There's definitely kernels of truth to this. I'm in no way here to defend, Perón and his legacy. But I think there's what I found more persuasive was the sort of a dynamic that we've seen some places in the United States. We've certainly seen in the Caribbean, an area that had really, really, really figured something out for a period of time and stuck to that solution that they'd really, really, really figured out long after it had any validity. The Caribbean island nations for a period in the 1600s, 1700s, were some of the wealthiest and most economically productive places on the planet. They've spent, in large part because of unfree labor, we have to mention. But then they've spent centuries since as economic backwaters. There are regions of the United States that were incredibly prosperous in the 1950s. We even have a word for it, the Rust Belt, in the 1950s that haven't impressed since, but haven't had as disastrous a period of time as Argentina has because they are still connected to the United States and can benefit from transfer payments and being part of a large economy. Argentina really, really had it figured out. It was sort of a California or a Taiwan of the late 1800s, early 1900s, and it just didn't figure out what was next after that was over. I was shocked by just how the extent to which Argentina is even for the Americas, Argentina is a very new country in a lot of ways. Kind of mind-blowing. Until the 1850s, there were under a million people there. There absolutely was a Spanish viceroyalty or what have you. There was presence in the territory of modern Argentina from the mid-1500s or something along those lines. But it seems like there just wasn't much going on there. Until the 1850s, there were like fewer people there than there are in New Hampshire today or Vermont or, you know, some small, small jurisdiction. That just was not a lot going on there. They had glorious independence history or what have you, but we're talking about a populations of just a few hundreds of thousands into the 1840s and 1850s. And then by the 1890s, you've got 5-6 million people just immediately, just incredibly quickly. And that was an explosion in population that continued for decades, really from the sort of consolidation of modern Argentina in the 1860s, sort of 1870 thereabouts, until almost up until the Great Depression. And you just constant flood of people. And this flood of people was able to develop the extraordinary agricultural resources of Argentina at a point when everything was working to the benefit of people who could provide agricultural resources on the level that Argentina was uniquely suited to do. Recently read, I'm trying to put together another Peter Zeihan video, and I recently read his book from 2020, Disunited Nations, and he's got a whole chapter on how Argentina is just the perfect country. From a geopolitical standpoint, the river systems are extraordinary. The resources, the centralization, the lack of natural enemies.
So a lot of overlaps with what works for America.
Indeed, it just, and when they had a fire hose of people coming in to a place that was, I think, always somewhat sparsely populated by the indigenous, but very, very enthusiastically genocided. More so than other Latin American countries, a truly sort of blank slate made in the worst way possible, filled very, very quickly with people who were eager to provide the agricultural resources that at that point in world history were tremendously vital to sort of the broadening of industrialization. They call it the first era of globalization leading up to World War I. And yeah, Argentina was just really, really, really well positioned along with the American Midwest, to provide agricultural resources, and were able to use that to become an extraordinarily wealthy country. And it worked really, 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 really well until it didn't. And I think that's the main problem for Argentina and for a lot of other countries that are predominantly resource-based. They're really reliant on demand increasing in meteoric ways that it just doesn't normally. You know, you've got the period of...
And it's also, it's basically out of your hands.
Yeah, exactly. You have almost no control over it. And really, I think that period of European and U.S. insane expansion before World War I and the period, the China shock of the 2000s, 2010s, are the only, I think, the only real points in post-industrial history where a country that is so resource-based as Argentina could become immensely successful. And unfortunately, Argentina spent the China shock years as an incredible economic basket case in debt default and kind of missed that window. So it's there's absolutely a lot of terrible choices that Argentina made and opportunities that they missed. But fundamentally, that like the main opportunity that they missed was to industrialize back in that period in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And by failing to do that, by failing to develop a reason for its prosperity beyond exporting agricultural goods, that's Argentina's main problem at this point.
Is it suffered that a lot of other countries in the region are doing something similar? So it's not like it has a Germany next door. That's a huge, you know, hub that it can sell straight into. It's almost like a lot of its neighbors are up to the same thing, so it's almost relying on other continents as opposed to other countries for its wealth.
Exactly. It is an agricultural exporter next to a commodities exporter next to a agricultural and commodities exporter. Brazil does significantly better than Argentina in managing its finances, but is also has its own problems. Chile does much, 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 much better, but they're all primarily exporters. Yeah, very dependent on the fortunes of the world economy. It's quite sad because there's a lot of folks in Argentina who believe that they're going to be saved by a sort of China shock type dynamic. It's interesting. A lot of the content that I used to prepare for this podcast was listening to podcasts that came out in the interim between the 22 October runoff, where Javier Milei actually came in second, and the November 19th runoff, where Javier Milei, the crazy libertarian, became the president of Argentina that is about to be installed on December 10th. So I guess by the time this is up, he will be president. So in the interim, a lot of people were assuming that it was going to be business as usual and that Sergio Massa, the guy who had won the first round when there were other competitors, sort of assuming he was going to be in power. And it was very interesting how his case and the case of everybody said, oh, no, it's okay that we're going to go with the status quo guy because we're going to be saved by electronic vehicles. We're going to be saved by all the lithium we can sell. We're going to be saved by all this, that, and the other thing. And it's just like, I don't think so. It is not credible. And I think that the problem with Argentina for the past century is that they've been telling themselves it's going to be as good as it was in the 1910s. It's going to get back there. And I just don't think it's going to get back there. Specifically, if it wasn't back there during the China shock of the 2000s and the 2010s, it is a really foolish thing to expect to get back there in the 2020s. I just don't see it.
Because I believe this new president may not be so favorable towards China.
Well, what's fascinating about this guy, Rory, is how, and this gets into what we'll be talking about next time, which is just, once again, U.S. power, is just how his politics are very American in sort of a shocking way, not just the libertarian nature, but he idolizes Donald Trump. He had as campaign merch, Make Argentina Great Again hats. He's quite consciously modeling himself after Donald Trump and U.S. politics. And as part of that, that sort of transnational American conservatism, he's really anti-China and he's really, really pro-Israel, interestingly
enough. He's super pro-American.
Well, yeah, super pro-American. To the extent he can't do it, but he wants to replace the Argentinian peso with the U.S. dollar.
I loved when I looked up, it was like they needed about 50 billion U.S. dollars to achieve this, and their current foreign currency fund is minus 1 billion.
Yeah, it is not going to work out very well. What's crazy though, and you know, this is we were talking over the last couple episodes about me falling back into weird libertarian approaches, is that the situation in Argentina is so dire that they actually do need this kind of disruption, which is kind of a disturbing, not saying there's any guarantee or even a likelihood that this guy is going to be a success or even complete his term as president. But this is a lot like Saudi Arabia with MBS. It's sort of like things are bad enough that you need some kind of crazy disruption. Not saying that this was the disruption you needed, but there needs to be serious change to the Argentina model. And
also the other thing that I'm sure a lot of big American businesses like the sound of is he's basically just going to sell Argentina.
Mass privatization. I mean, we'll see how much he can get away with. That's a fascinating question. I think it's worth pointing out that so what we've got is Peronism. Peron. I really should have sorted out. I should have practiced that in front of a mirror. I'm just having trouble.
The pronunciation.
Yeah, you know, it's based on Juan Perón, a guy who was
Perón,
who was a president of Argentina back in the 1940s, 1950s.
Would he be considered the first legitimate democratic leader?
No. So I would not put him in that category at all. So what's interesting about as bad as time as Argentina has had over the past 20 years especially, with a debt default, I think in 2001, one in 2014, one in 2020, and probably one likely in the next couple of years. It's actually one of the most stable democratic periods that Argentina has ever had. From 1983 until 2023, that's a full 40 years of democracy. There actually was a period of stability.
And they haven't had a coup in a very long time.
Exactly, 40 solid years.
I think they've had about 12 attempted coups in Argentina's history.
So
it seems
many.
The last one was in 1976.
So the crazy thing is they were, just to briefly run through it, Argentina became independent in the late 18-teens, sort of 18-teens, 1820, and then launched into a period, a period of decades that can be referred simply to as the Argentine Civil Wars. And that lasts until like the 1860s. So they become independent and have 40 years of more or less constant civil war. Like, obviously not, you know, at a lower level of intensity. And then that finally resolves in the 1850s, 1860s, thereabouts. And then we have the War of the Triple Alliance, which is this extraordinarily costly war, I believe, started by Paraguay, though that may be controversial to say, that lasts until 1870. So really, you don't have a stable polity in Argentina, a stable independent polity for like most of the 19th century. And then finally in the 1870s, 1880s, this incredible population boom comes, this incredible agricultural boom comes. And I believe you do have fairly stable transfers of power for a period of about 70 years. And then what derails Argentina are sort of two big geopolitical developments. In 1929, we've got the Great Depression. We talked about how incredibly dependent Argentina is and has always been on selling its agricultural exports. So trade across the board plummets during the Great Depression. Argentina is almost instantly falling into massive problems. And by 1930, I think it was September 1929, the stock market crashed. So basically, you know, at the very outset of the Great Depression, Argentina is already in so much trouble that they've got their first coup. And then it's just, I mean, there are democratic elections. There are periods of some stability. We've got Juan Perón, who I would not characterize as democratic. I mean, he was an Argentine army lieutenant general before he became president. What he was very successful at knitting together a variety of strands. Peronism is incredibly confusing because it's not very consistent. I think there's a real bias and a real sort of, I think I've talked about how there's like a pro-Republican bias or at least a pro-business bias, pro-neoliberal bias in U.S. media. And I think one of the things that they do is they describe Argentina as just this crazy left-wing problem. Peronism is not always a left-wing movement. There's, in fact, a lot of initial elements.
There's a lot of nationalism in it as well.
Exactly. A lot of nationalism in it. It is definitely trade union oriented. I've seen some, I don't know of how fair this is, I've seen some describing Peronism of the 1940s as having, you know, some fascistic elements. I think that's probably overblown, but it's founded by a general. It is all-encompassing. There are lots of trade unions in this broader Peronist system, but there's also a lot of industrialists. There's a lot It is an all-encompassing sort of ideological movement. So you've got this bias that describes Argentina's problems as being a left-wing thing, but probably the most pro-US, pro-business, neoliberal government that Argentina has ever had came in the 1990s as part of the leadership of the Peronist movement. Carlos Menem is seen as one of the great standard bearers of the Washington Consensus, which is another name for being hyper pro-business. It's sort of the international face of Reaganism, Thatcherism, what have you. And Carlos Menem was the guy. He got a ton. He was able to borrow a ton of money internationally because he privatized a bunch. He was all about liberalizing the economy, slashing taxes. He pegged the, I'm not sure if it was him specifically, but he was in charge of a period of time when the currency was pegged to the dollar. You know, the sort of shades of dollarization, a very different thing. And he's the guy who borrowed so much money that Argentina fell into the debt default in 2001 that sort of took Argentina out of the world economy during the China shock when Argentina should have been doing so well. So I think that it is, there's some bias there in saying, oh, you know, those crazy left-wing Argentinians, they're all screwed up. Absolutely, no question, Argentina under the Kirchners, the people who came after Carlos Menem, confusingly, the same political party, but a completely different approach. So you had Carlos Menem, I think it was the just...
Because didn't they have a split?
I don't... The actual minutiae of those political developments I'm not so great on, but I'd believe that. But also, that's the thing about Peronism, is that it can be different things in different eras. What folks were talking about with Sergio Massa, who was very close to the Kirchners, was that if he were elected, he was going to take things in a more right-wing direction or more pro-business direction and still be part of the same party. So yeah, I think there could very well have been a split, but I don't have the minutia. But it was still the Justicialist Party, a standard bearer of Peronism that in the 1990s was super pro-US, super pro-business, super privatization. And then that same party, after this debt default in 2001 and a bunch of political shifts and reformulations, that same party was the Kirchners and one of the standard bearers of the pink wave, the left-wing wave in Latin America. And one of the crazy things about the Kirchners and that period of left-wing government is that they actually couldn't borrow much money. That's not crazy at all, because they were dealing with debt defaults, renegotiations, this, that, and the other thing. And part of the reason that Argentina is in such a deep hole right now in terms of international debt is because the Kirchners and their allies lost in 2015. And Mauricio Macri, who was absolutely, he was also not a Peronist. He was the right-wing guy. You know, Javier Milei is crazy, crazy right-wing. And in part, he's been chosen because Argentina already tried the careful, pro-business, IMF-approved, U.S.-loved right-winger guy. That was Mauricio Macri in who was elected in 2015, was president between 2015 and 2019, and borrowed a absolute tons and tons of money, I believe tens of billions of dollars, was able to borrow all of this money.
Yeah, well, that's basically where both inflation and government spending shoots up at around that time.
Exactly, because he took all that money, and instead of using that money to reformulate things, he did a massive tax cut. We have this absolutely unsustainable, crazy Peronist system of clientelist politics, and that's a critique that's completely accurate. The amount of money that the Argentinian government spends is completely unsustainable, just doesn't work. They have this, you know, they've got Italy's system of social welfare and provision, you know, with, I don't know, Ecuador's economy. It has to change. But what the last right-wing guy who came in there did was borrow a ton of outsized money, cut nothing other than taxes. And really just screwed things up massively, even worse. who knows, maybe this gamble would have worked if COVID hadn't happened, but who cares? The fact is that Argentina has a truly unsustainable debt level because of two very pro-business, two U.S. politicians. And I think that's worth pointing out here. To caveat that a bit, the reason that Mauricio Macri failed so miserably was in part because of how powerful the Peronist movement was. Macri did something very successful that I think, I believe this is accurate. He's the only non-Peronist since the 1940s to complete a term in office. Because the Peronists have
such power
at every level of society that when a reformer comes in and tries to cut some of these programs, there are large-scale uprisings sort of fomented by the Peronists that basically boot them out of office. And I think a lot of folks believe that that's the most likely way that Javier Milei's time in power will end, will be getting booted out of office. So Macri thought he could just do this big tax cut and then it was going to make the economy do so well that he'd have this leeway to do some small cuts because he was too scared of the Argentine public and the benefits that they were used to. So while I think it is fair to point out that it was two right-wing, pro-business, pro-U.S. politicians who dug Argentina its massive, massive debt hole, Macri, I'm a little more sympathetic to because he was limited by the amount of power that the Peronists do, in fact, have in the economy.
And it's also this Peronist party, the PJ party, is essentially nearly always in power.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you look at historically, when the other parties are in, it's like it feels like a wee short term and then it's yep. like, oh, back to default. So
exactly.
It's hard for those parties to really get much traction in the small amount of time they're there.
Exactly. I want to say two things about Argentine history. Things were going pretty well until the Great Depression. And then they came to a sort of understanding under the Peronist approach that was probably not great and probably not too sustainable. But Argentina limped along without much hyperinflation, without too many insane deficits, until the oil crisis of 1973. And it's those two geopolitical events, I think, that truly killed Argentina, the Great Depression and the oil crisis of 1973. It's becoming a bit of an obsession for me. The more that I learn about economic history, just how important the 1973 oil crisis was everywhere. There was a massive boom after World War II that lifted really all boats, recently independent countries, Europe, the United States, just everywhere. And then the oil crisis happened. It's not even a metaphor. The oil that greased this success of those glorious 30 years after World War II became ruinously expensive everywhere. In the developed world, this led to regime change from sort of the New Deal era into the sort of Reaganite neoliberal world that we've all lived in since. And for Argentina, a country that was tremendously dependent on all those boats rising and everybody wanting more agricultural stuff all the time, it was disastrous. You had Perón himself, Juan Perón, briefly came in back into power, I believe in part as a result of the oil crisis. He died in power. His wife took over. And then you got
a third wife, I think. He seemed to get around.
He did. I believe that's the case. Not the one with the musical, I learned. Apparently the one with the musical died in the 1950s. So it would have been maybe perhaps the second. I don't know. Wife was in charge. And then a really horrific military junta that apparently murdered 15 to 20,000 leftists. And then finally in 1983, there was a return to democracy. But the country was already pretty wounded at that point. And it is interesting just seeing how important once again, the oil crisis was in sort of ending an old development model. And absolutely, it's been 50 years since the oil crisis. Wait, no, it's been 50 years since the oil crisis. And Argentinian politicians should absolutely be condemned, especially considering how educated and how sophisticated a country as it is, you know, should absolutely be condemned for not figuring out a better approach to things. But it is interesting just seeing how important those geopolitical events were.
Should Argentina not be celebrated for being a fairly, you know, it's been stable since, and it's a relatively peaceful country. It's, you know, seems to be more peaceful than its neighbors. And it's definitely somewhere that I don't think you or I would mind staying if we had to.
It's an amazing place. I've got family down there. They adore it. Certainly Scott on the Discord, on the Patrons Only Discord, is a, I believe, I don't know if he lives in Argentina permanently, but he spends a lot of time there and he loves it. There's a lot of, it has a lot going for it. As I said, I read that, you know, there's a whole chapter in a Peter Zeihan book talking about how phenomenally
he loves Argentina.
Argentina has handled certain things. Apparently, you know, Peter Zeihan's big thing is demographics and how demographics are crashing everywhere. And actually, Argentina, with, I believe, not much immigration, has apparently one of the more stable demographic.
Well, I know historically it had massive, especially a lot of Italians.
Oh, well, certainly. But apparently, unlike Italy, unlike the United States, you know, without immigrants, and unlike most of Europe, apparently Argentina, in part because it has this really involved and generous welfare state, apparently has maintained replacement fertility much better than really it seems. I was kind of shocked by the numbers, actually. I'd have to go back and look at them, but it seemed like better than.
It also owns so much of Antarctica. There's plenty of area to move into.
There's a lot of space. There's actually a lot of space in Argentina.
Definitely. I think the only thing Zeihan wouldn't like is I think he likes the idea of being on two oceans. So I think he would love a little bit of Chile just so they have access to both, because that's one thing he always talks about America.
Oh, he's a big fan, but he also points out that I think the reason that Chile and Argentina are two separate countries is because of a massive, massive mountain range. And that's also, that's good and defensible. He likes that. Another great thing about Argentina, this came up on a podcast, and one of the reasons that they have had 40 uninterrupted years of democracy is apparently, and this is a good thing that Carlos Menem did, apparently in the 1990s, they just eviscerated the military budgets because they are so naturally without enemies. Paraguay and Uruguay aren't particularly threatening, and Brazil is a very, very large country where most of the population is focused thousands of miles away. Chile is on the other side of a mountain range.
So you just go mad and attack the United Kingdom?
Exactly. Well, exactly. Exactly. The Falklands, which had the incredible, healthy impact of doing away with that murderous military regime. Losing to attacking the British and then losing to the British over the Falkland Islands ended the military regime in 1983, which is a very good thing.
The Falklands is known for bringing back one thing you hate, Rob.
Sheep?
Aircraft carriers.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
Because everybody was like Rob saying, oh, there's no use for aircraft carriers. And then suddenly one rocked up beside Argentina and it changed everybody's opinions.
Oh, it had an impact, did it? Yeah.
It's believed.
Hmm. I can't litigate the Falklands War.
No comment.
Haven't studied it. Haven't studied it recently. But it is a great thing that
what America and France is up to as well.
Oh, yeah, there's something about those missiles,
it's a very
right?
interesting piece of history. The French were in the middle of helping them with them, and the half they hadn't done, they just didn't fuse. So a lot of them didn't work purely because the French sort of sabotaged their own missiles.
Oh, interesting. But didn't the Argentinians sink a British ship with a French missile, at least one or something along those lines? I don't know. Don't remember
yes,
this stuff.
Definitely that did happen. But then also Britain sunk one of theirs as well. But that also brings us around to something very controversial, our cheeky chappy has said, which is he thinks Margaret Thatcher's great.
Yes. Yeah, that was the extraordinary thing, Rory, is he said that before he won 56% of the vote.
Exactly. Yeah. To me, at that point, it felt like he's like, let's just go mad and say everything. I'm not sure of the full context. It feels like that's a very sacrilegious thing to say in Argentina.
I definitely remember seeing tweets in between the first election and the runoff talking about a lot of very confident English-speaking commentators saying, well, Milei must be done here because there'd be some clip of him saying something, or there was this weird one of him sort of hyperventilating on television or something along those lines. And I guess we just didn't fully appreciate the extent of the desperation of the Argentine public, or the extent to which saying absolutely crazy stuff is just Milei's brand. Being nuts is sort of his approach. Though I did see something saying that the reason Margaret Thatcher is very unpopular in Argentina is because she was the prime minister in charge when Britain beat Argentina quite badly in the Falklands War. I think he had to back off on that. He made some kind of rote statement about how, those are definitely Argentine territory, and sort of moved on. But because of the humiliation of the Falklands War, and because the military dictatorship had proven itself to be so vile and violent, the Argentinian military apparently has been largely defunded. So there's not much chance of coups because there's not much of an Argentinian military, which is, you know, a good thing.
And also, if you're spending so much on social programs, people are less likely to rebel.
Indeed. So I think we've discussed the extent of the problem. Shall we, I guess, spend the balance of our time talking about the man himself? The lion, Javier Milei.
Yes. So I believe he was in a Rolling Stones tribute band.
Really? Oh, but that
might explain his look.
That builds affection for me. You know, I like that.
Well, I'll talk about some of the things he is hoping to do, which is mostly get rid of everything. There seems to be subsidies for electric and gas. They're out. He wants to dissolve a lot of government ministries, privatize all of the government companies, all 34 of them. Basically wants inflation down, which, you know, he can hope. Scrap. There's basically fancy pensions for people with high-ranking government jobs like politicians and judges and stuff. So that's just to get started and to bring spending to balance the budget in the first year.
Well, good luck with that. The problem, as much as I'd love to mock this, the problem is a lot of that program is unfortunately something that Argentina needs. Peronists and the welfare state may not have been what created the debt nightmare that Argentina is in, but Argentina is in a debt nightmare. They are not going to be saved by lithium deposits. They absolutely need to dramatically right-size their government. Can Milei do any of that?
Because I think the EU's opening up their own lithium. They're trying to get a lot of, you know, precious metals and stuff from Sweden. So
really?
That could be bad news for Argentina.
I think the Argentina model of like, oh, well, everybody who's got the lithium deposit is going to do amazingly well, I think is really, really faulty because, as you just pointed out, lithium is everywhere and it's actually not that hard to find. Also, I think people might be doing math, assuming that we're going to be all electric by 2030, which absolutely isn't going to happen.
There could be some massive battery breakthrough in a decade that doesn't need lithium.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's all relying on things that aren't going to materialize. And as insane as Javier Milei is, as distasteful as I've come to find a lot of his libertarian politics, unfortunately, by no means all, but a lot of his prescriptions, a lot of his ideas are probably kind of essential for Argentina moving forward. If there's going to be any kind of progress or improvement in Argentina, they're going to have to cut a lot. And the question is whether the Argentinian public will allow him to do it.
The other thing, though, is he'll be scrapping and reducing a lot of taxes as well at a time they may want to raise them.
Yeah. That's...
And apparently the Argentines are very bad at paying tax in the first place, so I don't see how this is going to help.
No. Well, there is actually a scope for, and this is something that in the American context, and I think almost certainly in the British context, at this point is a bad word and something that we've done too much of, with some exceptions, but deregulation. There are, in some cases, too many taxes in Argentina. Argentina was run under the Kirchners. In some ways, the Kirchners were much more fiscally responsible than the right-wing politicians who'd been in charge in Argentina. But in order to do that, they introduced a lot of economically bonkers taxes. I don't have the details at my fingertips, but my understanding is that their treatment of the agricultural bounty of Argentina was incredibly punitive. Large businesses having to pay absurd taxes that meant that larger businesses and international investors simply stopped being involved in Argentina. Argentina does have lithium deposits, does have natural resources, does have agricultural resources that could be better exploited if the tax system were more logical and if the regulatory system was more free. I am absolutely getting to a point where I believe the Anglo-Saxon world has had enough of Anglo-Saxon economics, like Reaganism, neoliberalism. Like, it's time to say stop and reverse a bit. But there are countries, and Argentina would probably be the best example in the world of a country that could use some more Anglo-Saxon economics, could use some more really, really basic deregulation. In the aggregate, absolutely, I think the tax cuts are insane. Apparently, Sergio Massa, the guy who was trying to beat Javier Milei, cut, I think, taxes on like 95% of, like, cut income taxes on 95% of Argentines in the run-up to the runoff elections, which is utterly insane. And I think that Javier Milei would have to put those taxes back in place. But I think in a more limited sense, there is scope for, I assume corporate taxes in Argentina are way too high. I assume that the taxes, the fees, the regulatory burdens that are placed on Argentine companies are way too high. So there is scope for some of that, but you're absolutely right. Like broad-based tax cuts, that's exactly what Mauricio Macri did, the guy who took the right-wing guy from 2015 to 2019, the pro-business guy, beloved of the IMF in the United States, who took Argentine's debt-to-GDP ratio from like 40% to 80%. He did that with a tax cut. And frankly, Javier Milei is libertarian, he is pro-business, but he is not going to get the Mauricio Macri treatment from foreign investors.
New business opportunity that might save Argentina, which is organ harvesting. Pruitt and says it should just be like any other business.
It's funny, I was listening to a lot of discussion of that and everyone's just like, we have no idea where that came from. He really does appear to be just someone who's a libertarian ideologue in a lot of ways. The other most controversial policy that he suggested is making abortion illegal again, which a lot of folks have accurately said is not very libertarian.
And he's also very pro-gun as well.
Yeah, he's the extent to which he's a U.S. Republican is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, he's almost like a parody of a U.S. Republican.
Indeed. But the abortion thing, people could say, well, you know, it's actually only very recently that Argentina allowed abortion. So this is sort of a more standard right-wing thing. But then they get to the right-wing thing in Argentina. But then they get to the organ markets, and they're just like, I have no idea. Yeah, he's a character, that's for sure.
He is very unique. We can't take that away from him.
Nope. And I think we should wish him luck, for sure. But I think it's...
Yeah, as you say, the sad thing is this could work. It's possible the way they've been run in Argentina is just a bit too corrupt or slow or old-fashioned, and having a big bunch of Americans worrying about their bottom line could just be that, you know, a bit more modern, but it could also just completely ransack the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it could work, and I think it's very, very unlikely to, is sort of my read on things. But we should wish him luck, and we should wish Argentina luck. It is it's a surprisingly large country, 45 million people, and a beautiful place to live.
And it's also what's very unique about it is the sheer amount of biomes, because it's more of a, you know, long as opposed to wide. You're able to get so many different types of weather, land masses, geology, everything. But one thing that may be a snag is that pointed out by JJ McCullough. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I believe
so. Our wonderful Canadian YouTuber.
Mm-hmm.
He was basically pointing out that the Congress has a lot more power in Argentina than the president, so he may not, and he doesn't have a full majority, his party doesn't have all that much power, so he might make a lot of noise and not really be able to implement a lot of change.
I think that's probably the most likely result, not just whether it's the Congress, whether it's the Peronist infrastructure of the country, whether it's riots in the streets of people who don't want to lose the government benefits that they have, which are incredibly important in a country that's now 40% under the poverty line or something along those lines. There are a lot of reasons.
It has sadly increased quite a lot.
There are a lot of reasons why Javier Milei is unlikely to succeed, not least his personality and approach to many, many things.
He does have a lot of take the money and run vibes about him.
He sure does. He sure does. Well, we do know that for sure it will be interesting. And I, for one, am grateful to Javier Milei for giving me an excuse to do a deeper dive on Argentina than the sort of stereotypes that I'd held in my mind about the country for 20 years. And I think he'll probably give us an opportunity to dive deeper. I don't think it's going to get less crazy.
And I think Argentina's future is going to have a lot to do with our next episode, which will be about America and how it kind of runs the world and isn't going to be going anywhere anytime soon, as it now has a new state that will be running using the dollar, it seems.
Well, just quickly caveat, that's very unlikely to happen. They don't have the money to dollarize. But with your general principle this guy really does seem to want to emulate the United States in every respect is very worth pointing out.
But it's possible that America could just say, we would really like, you know, to have a strong, powerful ally in South America, and Argentina is going to be that guy.
I don't know if it's really...
It really needs one?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily to our benefit to help a country dollarize. I think that El Salvador, Ecuador, Panama, and I think Venezuela, hilariously, I don't think Venezuela is seen as fully dollarizing.
Well,
but,
yeah, when all else fails, you use the dollar.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's really, I mean, the Federal Reserve, as we've talked about since 2008 and since 2020, has added massively, massively to its international stabilization duties. But I don't really think, making Argentina a dollar country would fit under any current mandate of the Federal Reserve or the Treasury Department or anything else. Don't see it happening. But who knows? We live in strange times, Ray. We live in strange times.
Well, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
The More Freedom Foundation is also available on YouTube and TikTok. Rob's Twitter is Rob O'Law, and he's also written a book called Avoiding the British Empire, What It Was and How the US Can Do Better. And music provided by Kevin MacLeod.